And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello again, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, broadcasting from BBS Radio, and welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552. Or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Ian McDonald is an English multi-instrumental musician, best known as a founding member of progressive rock group King Crimson, formed in 1969, and of the hard rock band Foreigner in 1976. He is also well known as a rock session musician, predominantly as a saxophonist. He also plays keyboards, flute, vibraphone, and guitar. A British rock giant and an acclaimed and respected member of New York's acting community walk into a recording studio and produce one of 2017's strongest and most compelling albums. This odd couple consists of multi-instrumentalist Ian McDonald and guitarist and lead vocalist Ted Zerkowski, co-founder of New York's celebrated Shakespeare ensemble, Frog and Peach, and a longtime member of the world-famous Actors Studio. Together, this unlikely new songwriting team conjured the album Bad Old World under the banner of their quartet, Honey West. Bad Old World is filled with memorable melodies and clever and sophisticated lyrics served on a bed of guitar-driven rock and roll played by top-shelf musicians, including drummer Steve Holly, whose credits include Paul McCartney and Wings and many others, and McDonald's son, Maxwell McDonald, on bass. The album also boasts a guest appearance by Graham Mabey on bass. While it's a modern sound stamped by Ian McDonald's world-class musicianship and production, it also bears an instant familiarity thanks to a sonic blueprint recalling such Brit rock titans as The Move and Mott the Hoople. Representative of the band's distinctive sound is Battle World's self-deprecating first single, Dementia, a four-on-the-floor rave-up that melds a driving beat and rampaging guitars with McDonald's signature baritone sax and Zerkowski's unique brand of lyrical mischief. With a cheeky nod to McDonald's British roots, there also is a helping of shy humor that permeates Honey West. Witness the new video containing the hard-charging, generationless man, which pays homage to both the visual style of the Beatles' influential film A Hard Day's Night and the wackiness of fellow countryman Benny Hill. As is usually the case in artistic collaborations, the pairing of McDonald and Zerkowski was a result of fate and, in this case, proximity as well. Honey West, named in honor and celebration of the proto-feminist 1960s cult TV spy series starring the ever-alluring Anne Francis, was already up and running when the two came together. For McDonald, discovering the scope and breadth of Zerkowski's talents was the catalyst for wanting to create a musical partnership. Please welcome multi-instrumentalist, songwriter, producer, and founding member of the progressive rock band King Crimson and hard rock band Foreigner, Ian McDonald, to the show. Hello, Ian. You need some hot tea for your cough, man.
Well, that was such a long introduction. I didn't know what to do with myself, but thank you very much.
Well, we got to tell the world a little bit of your history, because some of the young folk might not remember.
Well, okay. Well, thank you. It's good to be with you.
So what's it like working with your son, Max?
Well, it's great, of course. Very, very proud of him, of course. And he's a full-time member of the band now. And he plays on three tracks on the album. And he's if I say so myself, he's a very good musician, very good bass player, and he also plays guitar and keyboards and is a composer in his own right. But it's wonderful playing with him. Yeah, of course.
Is he a multi-instrumentalist like you? He plays a lot of instruments as well.
Well, as I said, he plays guitar, and
right.
Piano, and bass. He doesn't play any wind instruments, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very talented writer, and as I said, he's a composer in his own right.
Now you guys together are wonderful. I got to tell you and Ted, it's a musically you guys mesh to get very well. And I think I heard Ted says he lays down the lyrics first and then you come in with the music. But
pretty much all the songs start with a lyric. Ted may come in with some chord ideas and some initial melody, and I will take it from there, add a middle eight or a chorus or whatever, we just sit down with a couple of electric guitars and plug in see what we can come up with.
He's got a great voice. He really does.
I recognized that when I first saw him play with the original Honey West Band, which was a three-piece sort of alt country, for want of better description. I thought he was a very, powerful singer and good stage presence and very, intelligent writer. And I always like that. I like smart lyrics. I like smart music,
Right. Yeah, being with King Crimson, definitely.
I suppose,
Very intelligent band. How did you guys first meet? And how did you guys connect? Where you wanted to start working together?
Well, we literally lived across the street from one another here in New York. And
really,
we eventually spoke. You don't normally go up to people and start speaking here in the city, but. We eventually connected, and I found out that he had this band, Honey West, and I went to see them play, and ended up joining forces. They were kind enough to let me get involved and join in, and the band went through a couple of personnel changes after I came in, but we eventually wrote enough songs for an album and started recording, and that's what we hit, and the result is the Bad Old World album that we have here, and I'm quite proud of it. I'm quite pleased with the way it turned out. I think it's basically some of my best work in terms of production and arranging and things like that.
Well, you're 100% right. The production quality of this album is fantastic. And, I gave it 5 stars. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful piece.
Have you heard the whole album? Do you have the whole album?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yep, I've got it. They sent it to me. And then it's also already on YouTube. I don't know how they do that so quick. Hope you get paid for it.
No, we didn't. But I'm glad you have the physical CD. I encourage people to obtain that if they can. It's on Amazon, and because there's the artwork and there's a booklet with the lyrics and credits and all that sort of thing. So I encourage people to get the physical CD.
Yeah, it's an original style rock and roll album. You know, it's with a hint of there's some 60s in there, and I found some 80s in there as well. You got some great tracks, excellent tracks on there. So some
Thank
of
you.
My favorites, of course, Generationless Man. You know, to me a little bit like The Who, and then really cool lyrics, and that's one of my favorite tunes.
Oh, okay, yeah, it's Yeah, I mean, I think all the tracks are really good, and it's very
interesting.
They're all
very good.
To hear.
I agree.
It's just very interesting to hear people's favorites, you know, and the different songs come up, which to me is a good sign, you know, that a lot of various favorites come up, you know, and so Generationless Man, yeah, sure, that's one of the good ones.
That's one of the good ones. Of course, the title track, Bad Old World, very cool track, awesome guitar playing on that as well.
Oh.
Yep, another favorite.
That's all live, by the way, that track and many of the other, the vocal and the guitars are all recorded live, so...
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. So that's a lot of the album is recorded that way, including the vocals and, you know, the lead guitar parts and with sort of production elements put on later or after afterwards. Bad Old World, yeah, that lead guitar is live in the studio. Yeah, sure.
Dementia, wow. What a song that is. That good old rock and roll with a little Stones flavor in there, a little Kinks flavor in there as well. Fantastic tune. Fantastic.
Well, that's another one with a live vocal. That was Ted singing.
That's a live vocal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I added to baritone saxes, you know, in the style of Sounds Incorporated. I don't know if your listeners will know who the band Sounds Incorporated are, but they they played on Good Morning, Good Morning, on Sgt. Pepper and Savoy Truffle on the White Album, but just sort of baritone sax heavy ensemble. So it's a little tribute to them, homage.
Excellent. Awesome. Good. Awesome tune. You know, I wish terrestrial radio was any good anymore, because a lot of these songs belong on, you know, mainstream radio. I know we got the satellite out there now for everybody to enjoy, but you know, I was a disc jockey back in the late 70s. I did top 40 radio, and it hurts me to not see a lot of these guys put out like you fantastic albums, and they won't put you know, these great songs on there. It doesn't make sense, you know.
Yeah, I know. And well, you know, this is an album. It's the tracks are sequenced. You know, from beginning, there are 12 songs in a specific sequence, and you know, and even in my mind, there's a side one and side two. You know, it's just so we sort of. Made the album with that kind of thing in mind, even though it's not really that fashionable these days to do that, you know. But I wanted to make an album in the true sense of the word, I'm very pleased with the result. I think it turned out really well.
Old Man is another excellent song, and I could swear I heard Mick Jagger in the background. Somebody sounds like Mick in the background.
Me. That's me.
Is that you?
Yeah.
Another favorite, George Harrison, like guitar work. You know, it kind of sounds a little bit like George. Yeah. Is that
right,
was that you on guitar? Or was,
I did all the lead guitar.
That was you, huh? Yeah. Great song.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that's... It's an interesting one that you would pick out. So, A Girl Called Life is one of my favorites on the album. I like a lot of them. Brand New Car, you know, and so.
Then you got a couple of slower tracks on there, like Sailing.
Right.
California was a pure genius track. You know, it really shows.
Go on.
I was going to say it really spotlights both of you and your collaboration together on that one on California.
Yeah. Well, I call that our breakthrough song because that was the first mm-hmm. song that Ted and I wrote from scratch, you know. So,
really?
So it's the first song that we sort of completed together. And so that's mm-hmm. one of my favorites, too.
Sylvia Strange to me reminded me of the 80s a little bit and the MTV days. That was another good, very good, very different, okay. very different song. I always like to compare songs to, you know, other life, music, life experiences and things like that. But it's a wonderful album. Like I said, 5 stars. It's available on Amazon now, so that everyone can pick it up on Amazon.
Right.
There's, you know, it's impossible for you to make a bad album. It's, you know, with your talent and everything you've done, you know.
Well, that's very kind. That's very kind of you. And I'm going to get some hot tea to clear my throat.
that's fine. Yeah, you deserve it.
I'll continue talking. Do you want to?
Yeah, that's fine. We'll continue to talk while you get your hot tea. How's that?
No. I'm just kidding.
You sound better, by the way. You stopped coughing.
So, I know. Sorry. I thought we were wrapping up. Go ahead.
No. We're still going. This is it's actually 55 minutes. If you have somebody, you know, somewhere to go or something, just let me know as we go along.
55 minutes?
It's a 55-minute, it's all about you, you know. So we do our best for promoting each artist that we talk to. What are you guys going to do now as far as tour dates? Are you going to do any tour dates now?
Yeah, well, we're looking at different options as far as touring, and, you know, hopefully we can get on some festivals and whatnot, but we're doing gigs locally so far here in New York.
Okay.
That's something that we are working on, touring and doing other shows.
Right,
and the gigs that we've done so far have been very well received, you know. So, mm-hmm.
Good. It's a great band.
Thank you.
You were on board for the first three Foreigner albums, the debut album, 77, Double Vision, and Head Games. You guys had a 40th anniversary reunion at Jones Beach Theater. They brought in Lou Graham, who I've interviewed before. Lou's a great guy, and I'm so happy that he's out there singing again, and he sounds great. He really does.
Yeah,
he's been through a lot, you know.
Yeah.
Al Greenwood,
there I go again.
Of course, and then Mick Jones.
No, that was. Go on.
Go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say it was great to get together with, with the original, some of the original anyway, mm-hmm. guys, you know, including Al Greenwood and of course Lou. And yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. Lou sounds really good. He's in good voice. This is the best I've heard him for a long time, you know. And hopefully we can do more of that kind of thing. That was the Jones Beach gig. That's it's an amazing venue. It's this huge amphitheater on Long Island here, and never played there before. So yeah, that was great. We did two of the original songs, "Long Long Way From Home" and "Hot Blooded," and also their big hit, you know, "I Want to Know What Love Is."
Right.
We all joined in on that. So yeah.
Everyone needs to go on YouTube to see those two songs from the 48th anniversary reunion because they're right. Wonderful. And you guys were in great form that night as well. I'd love to see you guys all get back together again, you know.
Hopefully there'll be more things like that.
Yeah.
I think that was a sort of a test run, as it were, to see if it worked and make sure everyone was into it. But yeah.
Would you be up for that if it came across? I mean, if you know.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. As I said, it was great, you know, getting together with the original guys, and the current band is a great bunch of guys, and so yeah.
You were there in the beginning, right? Were you there when they were auditioning singers, and then they finally picked Lou? You guys went through a lot of singers before you got Lou. Is that true?
Well, no. I was a founding member, and we did audition some singers, and then I went over to Mick Jones's place one day, and he put on the Black Sheep album.
Right.
Just on the turntable, and I heard Lou's voice, you know, and after about, I don't know, 15, 20 seconds, I said, "That's our guy, that's him." And you know, we still had to go through doing demos and things like that. You know, Mick, this is our guy. And of course he was, you know, but.
Were you at Cal Jam 2? Were you at that show?
Yes. Yeah.
California Jam 2. What was your? I interviewed a lot of guys from Cal Jam 1 and Cal Jam 2, and I got a lot of. You know, I talked to Keith Emerson. I talked to Greg Lake. I talked to Frank Marino recently, who was at Cal Jam 2. What was your impression of that show?
Well, it was great. I mean, I always like those big festivals. It was terrific. Actually, I think that was the last show I played with Foreigner, I think.
Is that right?
Carl Jam 2. I think that was my last show. but it's great. It was an exciting time, you know, to do these big shows.
Were you musically trained, you and your son?
Well, Max didn't have formal music training. I mean, there was a lot of music around the house, and you know, I guess things sort of rubbed off
right
from me. But I had a certain amount of formal training.
I was
in the British Army as a bandsman
right.
from the age of 16 to 21, so 5 years. And so during which time I learned to read music and learned about harmony and, you know, orchestration and ear training and things like that. So I had a certain amount of formal training, yeah. During that time, played various musical styles in very different sort of ensembles or you know, sort of formats, and so I guess I brought some of that experience into King Crimson and to everything I do, I suppose. You know.
Well, you brought all the best times in both bands. I mean, when you were there, that was like the highlight of both of those bands. When you were there, so you did bring a lot to the band.
Thank you.
You really
thank
did.
Thank you. I like to think, you know, I like to think that I contributed
You did.
Whatever I'm involved with, I just try and bring as much of my knowledge and experience as I can.
Yeah, you remind me a little bit of Michael Pinder from Moody Blues, because he was in the British Army as well. And do you know Mike from the Moody Blues?
Who's I know who he is.
Yeah, he also played the Mellotron in introduced.
I know.
He did the he was part of the early founder of the Moody Blues back in the early 60s. But he was in the British Army and same thing. I mean, he discovered the Beatles while he was in the military, and that's when he started playing music. Yeah, very very similar stories. It's amazing.
I didn't know that. I heard the Beatles coming over the little speaker in the cafeteria or whatever, after being in the army for 2 weeks and not knowing what the heck I was doing there, and then I heard From Me to You coming over the speaker, and it sort of gave me hope, That was the first thing I heard. So I've been a total Beatle fanatic ever since. You know, sort of saved my life in a sense. You know, just gave me hope, and I managed to get out after 5 years, and then King Crimson happened. You know, pretty much right away.
What did you do in the British Army? Where were you stationed?
It was in Canterbury and first of all, and then Gibraltar. I was there for 6 months, and then I spent a year at the Royal Military School of Music. And then I went to British Guiana and then Belfast in Northern Ireland, and that's where I finally got out.
Well, 5 years is a long time. Yeah.
Well, it was my teenage years, 16 to 21.
Okay.
So in that sense, it was a really long time, yeah. And it would have been more. Sorry, I have to clear my throat. I didn't realize we were going to go this in-depth.
Sorry about that.
It would have been more, but it would have been 11 years, but I managed to get out, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, King Crimson made its live debut on April 9th, 1969, and made a breakthrough by playing the Rolling Stones free concert, right, in Hyde Park. And there was like a 500,000 people there at that show, and that was like your first live debut. What a way to, start your career, in front of 500,000 people.
We had done a few shows in other places, but we were in the middle of a residency at the Marquee Club in London at the time, and the day after the Hyde Park show the place was just like packed, so we definitely made an impression on the Stones show.
In the Court of the Crimson King is probably considered one of the most influential progressive rock albums of the genre. And, I'm a big fan of progressive rock. I've always been, more than anything. I really appreciate that music, because it's intricate. It's played by proficient musicians, guys that are, incredible musicians. You worked really hard on that album, I understand. Overdubbing and with the Mellotron and various instruments. You were a big part of that album.
Well, of course, yeah. I basically headed the production I co-wrote all the tunes and... Played a lot of the instruments, and we recorded very quickly. We didn't have a lot of time or budget or anything like that. We just had to get in the studio and press on and just get keep moving, you know, and just get it recorded, and then yeah.
I want to tell the audience how many instruments you played on this album. You played the woodwinds, saxophone, flute, clarinet, bass clarinet, then the keyboards. You played the mellotron, the harpsichord, piano, and organ. And then you did backing vocals, production. You played the vibraphone. I mean, that's your album.
Well, I had a lot to do, you know. Yeah, I mean, I get involved, you know. What
yes,
can I
you
say?
Do.
I mean,
that was that's one of the, you know, top albums in history as far as you know, progressive rock and just rock in general. Well, was there some some issues with that though, as far as distortion in the album after you guys recorded that? I heard there's some kind of. So you found out there was some unwanted distortion or something like that, and you had a.
I don't recall any of that.
That's a myth then.
Yeah, I mean we added distortion to Greg's. Hang on, sorry, you're going to have to edit all this out. Sorry.
Okay, no problem.
We added distortion to Greg's voice on Schizoid Man. I mean, that was intentional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we overloaded the mixing console on Greg's voice deliberately, you know, to give it that sound. But as far as any technical problems, I don't recall. No.
Mm. I read it said it had misalignment. Resulted in a loss of high frequencies and introduced some unwanted distortion. I don't know where they got that from. So
no, I don't know. You'd have to ask Fripp about that because I don't remember anything like that.
Huh? You also played on one of my favorite albums as well, is the Red Album. You also made an appearance on that as well, right?
Right. Yeah, I did some alto sax work. Play, you know, solos on that. Yeah. So I played on one more Red Nightmare. Is that the name of the track? I quite like the solo on that. I think that worked out fairly well.
What do you think of the current lineup of King Crimson, and why aren't you in it?
Well, I wasn't invited for one thing, and I haven't heard the latest. The latest incarnation. I'm glad they're out there. I haven't seen or heard them myself yet. I think they have enough players already. They don't need me.
Got a lot of players. Yeah, they do have a lot of players in the band right now. They've got it's Fripp, Collins, Levin, Mastelotto, Harrison, and some other guys, about three other guys. I guess those are the main ones. Yeah. I guess Fripp has been there the longest. He's been there since the beginning.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's carried on the name, you know.
Right.
So, but I was a founding member, you know, so.
You also played, a lot of people probably don't know this, you were on the original recording of Get It On, Bang a Gong, T-Rex.
Right.
Go ahead.
I played the saxes on that. Baritone sax and also alto, there's an alto sax in there as well.
That's another all-time classic, that it is timeless. What was it like working with Mark Bolan?
It was great. I mean, everything was done very quickly.
Really?
Tony Visconti was producing, but Mark didn't want to to dwell on details, you know, you just get the song done and, mm-hmm. and get the next one on done, you know. It was, it was great. I mean, I don't remember too much about it. It was all done very quickly, but I do remember that Mary Hopkin was in the studio while I was doing that, which was nice to see her.
Oh yeah.
Mark was great. As I said, you know, just didn't want to hang around and refine things too much. Just get the song recorded and move on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Rick Wakeman played on that, and Bill Legend on drums, Steve Curry. They were on the track, and they credited Mark Volman and Howard Kalin from the Turtles as backing vocals, which
That's true. Yeah,
I had no idea. I know Mark and Howard, both of them, and they're good guys, both of them. Yeah. Still rocking and rolling with the Turtles.
Yeah, that's them on backing vocals. Yeah,
I had no idea. You also did collaborations, great, awesome collaborations with John Wetton. God rest his soul. He was, you know, he's going to be very missed. And Steve Hackett, who I've had on the show as well. You do a fantastic version of Watcher of the Skies. And again, people see that on YouTube. Yeah, that's incredible.
They're very good friends of mine. I've known Steve Hackett since even, you know, before the Genesis days. So we go way back. He's a very good friend of mine, and of course John Wetton was a great friend of mine also. And we did a number of shows. I think there's a CD out of Tokyo live in Tokyo. I think there's a CD out with Steve Hackett and John Wetton and a number of other people, of course.
Well, I've got to get that. I didn't know that. Is that an import or is that?
I don't know. It came out in 1995, I believe, or six.
Really? Yeah, you guys are incredible together. You also had I Talk to the Wind is another great song that's on YouTube that people need to check out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another band that you were in that's kind of I want to say it's kind of a cult album today, and there's a lot of people that love this McDonald and Giles release in 1971.
All right.
That was a great album, and I think Steve Winwood played on that as well, right? Didn't he play a little bit on that?
He played a little bit on it, yeah. We did a remastering of that about 10 years ago or whatever, Mike and I. It's an interesting album.
It is. Yep.
I'd love to have the opportunity to remix it, but I don't know where the multi-track tapes are. But we did manage to do a remastering, I was able to fix a few things and tighten it up a little bit, and that's available on. A reissued version on Virgin Records, I believe. So, that's an interesting record.
Yeah, music aficionados love that one. I mean, people that really know about music, you know, really enjoy that album. But you guys only made one together, right? You only released one album?
Yeah.
And what I understand, when you were making this, I think Steve Winwood was with Traffic working on John Bollicorn Must Die in the I think it was at Island Studios at the same time.
When,
yeah, which is another favorite album of mine by Traffic.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That's probably how I met Steve and asked him to play on it.
Here's a question I ask everybody, and I get some interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, you know, you're offered a dream, a wish, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Well, a couple of names spring to mind. Obviously, John Lennon would have been a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, the Steely Dan guys, Donald Fagen, Fagen and Walter Becker. Next to the Beatles, that's my favorite band of all time. I just love Steely Dan's music, and I go and see them perform here in New York whenever I can. Every 1 or 2 years they perform here at the Beacon Theatre. So that would be a wonderful thing. I wish my writing could come even close to their writing. So that would be a dream collaboration.
Yeah, I think Donald Fagen's doing some solo stuff now with another, you know, bunch of guys that he put together.
Well, it's the Night Flyers. Right. So, Asia and Gaucho. I mean, the two. I mean, as well as the others. Just masterpieces in my opinion.
One of my favorite instruments is the saxophone. I love the sax. Mm. Who were some of your favorite sax players?
I play alto mostly. There was an album by a saxophone alto player by the name of John Handy, who most people may have not heard of, but there was a live album of his that I used to play and listen to over and over again, John Handy. And then there's Eric Dolphy, who was brilliant. Let me see. There's a couple of players that come to mind.
How about Coltrane?
I like Coltrane. He's a tenor player.
Yeah. Charlie Parker.
Pardon?
Charlie Parker.
Well, yeah, Charlie Parker, of course, was in the alto, but obviously these guys are great, and goes without saying, really. Coltrane. He's one of the few people that can make the soprano sax sound decent, in my opinion. I don't hate many instruments, but the soprano just drives me. You know, I can't stand the sound of soprano sax. Sidney Bechet was another one. He could make it sound okay. I love the baritone sax. I listen to all music. I don't like zone in on players that play the same instrument as myself necessarily.
Right.
You know. I just try and keep an open open mind.
That now, when you were in Foreigner, besides the sax, you did play a lot of guitar too.
Yeah, I always have actually. I play guitar in almost all the songs, all the hit singles and everything. So I've always played guitar. I think one mistake I might have made is not playing guitar on the first King Crimson album, because very often people are surprised to see me with a guitar. I wrote The Call to the Crimson King on guitar. I wrote Night Talk to the Wind on guitar. And it's basically, it's essentially my first instrument. And with Honey West, I'm essentially playing a guitar on all the tracks. So it's as I said earlier, it's a two guitar and bass drum sort of set up with vocals, I've always played guitar, and it comes as a surprise to some people, but that's my first instrument really.
Do you have a collection of instruments in the house? I mean, do you have like 50 guitars and 10 saxophones?
Well, I did it one. I did it. I just have one. I just have one alto sax. I don't even have a Barry. And I did at one time have a bunch of guitars, but I sold them off one by one, and I just have my 63 Tele, which.
Oh wow, 63!
I'll never get rid of that. That's my main main guitar is the one I played on all the Foreigner records, and it's originally a Daphne Blue guitar, but the finish was taken off, so it's. Just has a wood finish now, but that was a great guitar, and I still have that. I went through a phase of buying all vintage guitars, all the Carinas and a lot of great guitars that, as I said, one by one, I sold off to.
Yeah, you know, a lot of guys are doing that. They are selling their guitars off. I know Clapton did that for a while, selling off a lot of his guitars, and a lot of other guys I talked to. But why is that?
He did that for charity. I did it because I needed. I had bills to pay.
Okay, that makes sense.
I had rent and other expenses,
right.
So I didn't necessarily want to sell them, but it was right before the whole vintage guitar boom took place. I just kind of missed that boat a little bit.
That's a shame.
But anyway.
Guitars are better than the stock market. I mean, if you get the right guitars, you can really clean up, and make a lot of money.
Well, I know that.
I had a 73 Fender Telecaster, and I had that thing since I was, I don't know, 16, 17 years old. I sold it because my first book, I wanted to publish it, and I needed money for. The editing and all the costs and everything, and I made out like a bandit though. I think I paid $300 for it, and I sold it for like over three thousand.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, and they had a lot of autographs on there too. I had Johnny Winter and John Kay from Steppenwolf and Alvin Lee. Right. Yeah, so that might have made the value go up a little more, but
right.
But
right.
I miss it. I miss that guitar. I really do.
I miss. I miss a lot of my guitars too. I know where a few of them are, so I don't know. So if I end up making a fortune from this Honey West album, then maybe I can buy some of buy some of them back.
There you go. Or maybe a tour, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Maybe a Honey West tour would be nice. Ian, is there anything else you'd like to add or promote? I know we covered a lot.
Well,
what's next?
I'm sorry?
What's next? What are you gonna be working on next? I know you want to get the most out of this album. Everybody needs to buy it.
Ted and I are writing.
Okay.
More songs for another album.
Awesome.
But I would really like for people to hear this Bad Old World album, and if possible, to obtain a physical copy, because there are, you know, there's artwork and there's credits and lyrics and a booklet,
right,
and all that goes with it. So that's what I'd really like for people to have and enjoy the album as an album, you know, not just sort of a download of a song here and a song there.
Exactly.
But that's the way things are these days. So, as I said, I'm really proud of the album. I think it's not some of my best work production-wise, and I'm really the songs that Ted and I composed, I think are very good, and we'll take it from here.
Well, the next album, are you thinking about pretty much the same style as this one, or do you have anything else totally different in mind?
I don't know. I don't really want to try and you know, do Son of Bad Old World with the songs will be different, and I don't even know if I will record in an album context. We'll see. But we are writing and coming up with some good, you know, good ideas.
Ian, thank you so much for being on the show today, and for all the great music you bring us.
You're
a wonderful musician, and you've done some fantastic things in your career, and we look forward to more great music with Honey West.
Great. Thank you, Ray. Thank you for your interest and your expert knowledge.
Thank you, Ian.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, cheers.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bad Old World by Honey West is available to purchase at Amazon.com. For more information on Honey West, visit www.honeywestmusic.com or on Facebook at www.facebook.com/honeywestmusic. Very special thanks to Randy Alexander, President and CEO of Randex Communications, for arranging this interview with the great Ian McDonald. And to Doug and Don Newsome with VBS Radio for making it all happen every show. Join me bi-weekly Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on The Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on The Ray Shasho Show, call 941-877-1552 or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. And don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, or the second edition entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C., available now at Amazon.com, and I promise you, you will live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by The Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on PBS Radio, Station 1.